And the other reason we're running, we're gonna make sure it happens, is we've got to rebuild the backbone of this country. The working class, the middle class, they've been getting laid out badly by this administration. The middle class is being hurt very badly. But look, you know what?
I pledge to be a president who seeks not to divide, but unify.
If I'm elected president, you're going to see the single most important thing that changes America is we're going to cure cancer.
This is the Trevor Carey Show. On the Valley's Power Talk.
We need a president who's not only ready to fight, but is also ready to heal this country. We can't hold grudges. We've got to be able to go out and unify the country, because the president's supposed to heal as well as fight. I'm going to go all over this country, every part of the Democratic Party, and unite it. Men, women, gay, straight, everyone. Black, brown, the whole universe of people out there.
Excuse me, what am I doing here? I'm going to lose track here. And
you're losing track of the United States economy. We're the largest economy in the world. We have a gross domestic product of more than $22 trillion. There are more than 30 million firms in this country, in size from single owners to some that have over 2 million employees. As of 2019, the United States economy employed more than 157 million people. We know that what we do here in this country meets all the needs, day-to-day lives of 333 million people that live in this country. But literally, the United States, we support billions across the globe. They use our products. They use our services, and it should be America first, America made. That would really be good. But our economy has actually created more prosperity for people than any time in history. And this Joe Biden administration, they're going to destroy it unless we stop them. I'm going to quote Saki Tuya, Press Secretary Saki. She said this week, quote, "The president wants to make fundamental change in our economy, and he feels coming out of the pandemic is exactly the time to do that." Well, there's nothing in the president's job description. And I'm talking about Article 2 of the United States Constitution. Nothing gives him the power or the right to, as Saki said, fundamentally change the U.S. economy. I'm sorry, he's not the guy for that. They know this. They know that we're suffering from what's going on from these decisions. On the first day, man, when this cat came into office, he shut down the Keystone Pipeline. He ended the energy independence that we had under former President Trump, and we've seen gas prices just go through the roof. Every penny increase at the pump cost Americans $1 billion. Isn't that amazing? Gas goes from 422 to 423, and a dollar increase cost $100 billion. And then let's look at the foundation of the pyramid. What's the foundation of our economy right now? Small businesses, right? The permanent closure of 200,000 businesses in 2020. And now on top of that, a supply chain crisis, at our busiest ports, the backlogs. These bottlenecks, right now we have 11 million unfilled jobs in the United States, a record. And you got Biden issuing more mandates for employees to take vaccines. New York State, healthcare workers, you got 25,000 that just walked off. Do you know what? I mean, okay, I say that, right? You read the headline. You're going home for the weekend. Oh, okay, New York, 25,000 employees, healthcare laid off. When you start adding all this up, do you understand that even more chaos is coming? I don't think we understand actually what's being built here. This is being built. It's not being destroyed. It's being built. In Massachusetts, you got state troopers turning in their paperwork. LA County Sheriff Villanueva refusing the mandate. He said he'd lose 10% of his force. Well, why would you do all this? Why create all this chaos? And I do believe it's intentional. And the reason I believe it is they wrote the playbook. They wrote the playbook the year I was born. 1966, there was a cat named Richard. Richard Cloward, and Francis Fox Piven. Well, let me refresh you. We've talked about this before. They were those elite, as Dr. Victor Davis Hanson calls them, progressive elites. Oh, they were around in the 60s, boy, and they took pen to paper, and they wrote down a guide. It's called the Cloward-Piven strategy, and I've discussed this twice. And the only person to tell me that they looked it up was my mom. So thanks, Mom. She looked it up. The Cloward-Piven strategy. Let me spell that. C-L-O-W-A-R-D. Cloward. Piven is P-I-V-E-N. These were academics, Richard and Francis. And what they wanted to do, the Cloward-Piven strategy, is to overload the U.S. public welfare system so that a crisis would lead to a replacement of that system with a national system of a guaranteed annual income. And they said in 66 they would end poverty. So they set out, and I tell you, this is their playbook, man, along with Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. But this is an attack on capitalism, on the free enterprise system. When I say intentional, it's to destroy the system and replace it with socialism, which basically give you empty shelves. And I'm not under the illusion that Joe Biden is calling the shots, right? Allowing all this chaos, our open border, Afghanistan, the supply chain disaster, having to fire people over mandates, inflation. I mean, all of this, right? This Cloward-Piven strategy, it really is the mainstream leftist ideology, man. This is the way that they plan things. It's chaos. And we might go, oh boy, Biden is so stupid. How irrational, how insane. But it's not. It's actually evil from the pits of hell. This is the same kind of thinking that led to gulags and guillotines and we go back to Obama, the fundamental transformation of America. Those are the words that he used. Now we got Psaki saying Biden is fundamentally going to change the economy. We know the Obama administration, and we know who was in that. That's right. Joe Biden was. They tried to get rid of the greatest healthcare system known to man, the world had ever known, right? Obamacare. Obama lied about what he was doing. And then when he got what he wanted and people started to see through it and go, hey, this isn't working, he just said, hey, you guys don't understand what's going on right now. And if you go back and you research this Cloward-Piven strategy, you'll see what it was. The goal's never to give better health care. The goal's not to give more affordable health care. It was to destroy the system. And then you replace it with government control. How do you get that quickly? Don't let a good crisis go to waste. The man-made lockdown, the pandemic, all of this, right? Complete government control. We are accepting things now. By we, I mean all of us are accepting things now that 2 years ago we'd been like, what, in America? Get out of here. Come on. What are you talking about, right? Here we are. And understand, the radical left, basically the entire Democrat Party, They mean this. This is a socialistic takeover of capitalism. It's so obvious. Don't underestimate them. And they want to say they're progressive. This is nothing about progress. It's actually hard to believe that it's happening again in the world, that socialism, that it's even happening again. But what's more amazing is happening right here. Cloward-Piven. It's going to bring America to its knees. You know what? They implemented this Cloward-Piven, this mindset, into New York City in the 70s. And you saw what happened in New York City in the 70s, and it continued into the 80s. And then you had to have a conservative come in as, a Republican, Giuliani, come in as mayor of New York City. And he turned everything that they've done, he did it the opposite way. And you saw a major, major resurgence of New York City, right? And just don't think, oh, Biden's just a goofball, right? No, wake up. This is organized. This is deliberate. Nobody makes mistakes like this. Nobody does. It's intentional. It's a destruction of America. And Republicans are silent about this. And isn't that scary that they're being silent about this? You got Biden's White House chief of staff retweeting that things like inflation and empty shelves are high-class problems. What a tool. While we got all these ports right now. They're saying that it's going to be eased up a little bit. Joe Biden said that he's going to make them go 24/7, man, 365 days a year. Joe, you know what? They've already been doing that for 3 weeks. The reality is, let's go to our roving reporter. He's out live at the grocery store.
Well, here we are in the supermarket. We're standing here with the bare shelves. Look at it. There's absolutely nothing here. The shelves are bare. It's empty. It's empty like Sleepy Joe's brain when you think about it. There's absolutely nothing on the shelf. Look at it. Bare shelves all over the place. They say we're building back better, and yet we have nothing in the supermarkets. We're standing with the bare shelves. Bare shelves, Biden, okay? Empty shelves, Joe. It's a disgrace, believe me.
Bare shelves, Biden.
Don't you think that even with a breakthrough infection, untreated, you're probably more vulnerable than the average child who is not vaccinated who gets COVID? You're not worried about catching it because you've been vaccinated and you think it imparts a certain amount of protection. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying to you is I think that not worry is the same feeling that a lot of people have about their children. They're not worried about their healthy children catching it for the same reason you're not worried about catching it being vaccinated.
That was Joe Rogan with CNN's Dr. Sanjay Gupta. Well, Gupta tucked his tail back at CNN. It's obvious they forced him to humiliate himself. He had to go back on CNN and backtrack. I'll play you that audio next.
This is the Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk. You're listening to the Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk.
I played you the audio yesterday of Dr. Sanjay Gupta. He was on Joe Rogan's podcast, and Joe Rogan was going after him, saying, why did CNN lie about me? I took ivermectin, and he said it was a horse dewormer. They lied. He admitted that they lied and didn't know why they lied. And he got him into the corner, said, actually, ivermectin actually did work. You know, you get it from the doctor as well. But no, he had to tuck tail, man. He had to get back on CNN. How humiliating. They made him get back on and actually backtrack. Listen to this here.
And it is not approved for COVID. Correct?
That's right. That's correct. It is not approved for COVID. And you're right. I mean, the FDA even put out a statement saying, you know, basically reminding people, it was a strange sort of message from the FDA, but that said, you're not a horse, you're not a cow, stop taking this stuff, is essentially what they said, referring to ivermectin. Now, I think what Joe's point
that
is...
It's been approved for humans, but not necessarily for COVID, right? Yeah.
Yeah, make that's him correct. Say that. Correct.
It's been used for a parasitic disease, for something, it's called river blindness, and it's been very effective for that.
Yeah.
But, you know, just because it works for one thing doesn't mean it works for something
Backtrack, Gupta. There you go. How humiliating. CNN is absolute crap. They lie about people, and one of their employees is forced to admit that they lied when confronted by the actual person that they lied about, right? They force him to go on the air like that and humiliate himself by backtracking. Yeah, that's... Agent Squires and I were talking yesterday. We didn't know if he's an employee or maybe he's just hired as an outside consultant, but I think that answers it. He's an employee. That answers it right there. This whole supply chain, you know, it's basically the basics of government, correct? To talk about the failings at the basic of actually governing. They can't even keep our store shelves stocked. And I'm worried about small businesses. They count on full shelves during the Christmas season to make that year, man. I don't have to tell you that, small business. You know that, right? And they were already rocked. Small business was already rocked. And on top of this, and it has to be intentional. I don't know how it cannot not be intentional. And you got Psaki, Press Secretary Sakatiya Psaki, trying to tell Americans that we shouldn't be looking at cost-to-cost comparison from today to 2 years ago, that we're saying we shouldn't be doing that, trying to tell us that transitory inflation, that it's going to somehow, I guess, we'll just transit right back to prices before. It's not going to happen. You got the value of the dollar dropping. You got prices going up. That's the opposite of the Trump administration policies. You had prices going down. You had the value of the dollar going up. Your paycheck had more disposable purchasing power because it actually was. Every time the prices went down, it's as if your paycheck actually went up, even though your boss might not have sat down and given you a raise. But even now, right now, maybe your boss hadn't sat down and said, I'm going to deduct this from your paycheck. It's happening because of the cost of the prices going up. And has Biden sat down? Has he talked to Americans about the hostages? We got 36 California school children still under control of the Taliban. You think that right there would be a press conference, that he would sit down and talk to America and let reporters ask questions, right? Well, they asked Saket Tuyasaki. They asked her, they said, when's he going to hold his first solo press conference? What is this, October? Hey, Joe, you going to have a press conference? One reporter asked, can you update us on his first press conference? You know what Saki said? Not yet. We'll schedule it, and you'll be the first to know. How condescending. I mean, we know right now that everything has been turned upside down on its head. And the reasoning that you can't believe anything that comes out of their mouth is, it's not my opinion. It's actually, you know, there's a thing called recording devices that record what they said. And I'm not talking a few years ago, like they had time to change their opinion. I'm just talking months and in some cases weeks ago. You go back to December of last year and you had Biden saying, I don't think vaccines are mandatory. I would not demand it to be mandatory. Now, from December of 2020 till right now, if we had had, pandemic times 10, and people were in line and people were dying left and right and all of this, I'd be like, well, I can understand. At that point, he said it's not mandatory, but look what's happened. And if the efficacy of the vaccines were still staying at 95%, 98%, like they're talking about, go look some of these up. We're down to the rates of below 50%. So it takes a lot of variables to come into somebody changing their mind on something. Sure, policies change. Sure, people might learn something new with science, change the policy. But to say it shouldn't be mandatory, then demand it be mandatory, look and see what has changed. Nothing's changed except their view of control, and it's all about control. And the fact that they're not talking about natural immunity, not even talking about it. They're not even talking about the vaccine injuries, which now I have an update, and I hate to say this update. It's the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VAERS, from the CDC. As of October 1st, 16,310 deaths from the shots so far. 33% of those occurred on day 0, 1, or 2 after the vaccination. There have been 778,000 total adverse events, and you know these are underreported. And that should increase alarm. These are underreported. And now you're going to go down to the military and you're going to go down to 5-year-olds. Yeah, they are. A voice of reason and sanity in a chaotic time. Dr. Victor Davis Hanson. We're going to talk to him next.
This is the Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk. The Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk.
He's had many New York Times bestsellers. He's got a new one here, The Dying Citizen, back on the show, Dr. Victor Davis Hanson. Dr. Hanson, happy Friday to you.
Thank you for having me, Trevor.
You know it. Are you in the Valley or are you traveling elsewhere?
No, I'm in Selma
today. Oh, you're right here. Then you're in my two favorite months. Now, I'm going on 6 years now just staying here in the Valley, and November and April are my two favorite months.
Yeah, I think most people agree with you.
Yeah.
Those are really good. Early November and early May are nice, too.
Yeah, and I can always tell by, you know how PG&E does that graph of how much you're charged? I see November low and April low, so that must mean the best weather months as well. Well, if we take the temperature of this nation, Dr. Hanson, and I hear from new listeners, they might email me and ask me about a word or phrase I use, and they want to know what I meant. And I assume they knew what a you know, a cultural Marxist was. So I want you to break down the three titles in your book here. Elite, Progressive Elites, Tribalism, and Globalism. Explain, what's a progressive elite?
Progressive elite is somebody who believes that human nature changes and that it progresses and it always improves due to more money in government or more greater science. And therefore, the progressive expert, the academic or the political activist or the lawyer, they have to update for us the unknowing or ancient institutions. So maybe they have to say, well, you know what? The national anthem came from a bad time in American history. We're going to have a new one. Or maybe we don't really need the flag salute or a nine-person Supreme Court or electoral college or the filibuster. So they're always trying to change the system to reflect their own interest, which is to change a constitutional republic into some sort of radical equality result democracy, if that.
So I guess we can, a Nancy Pelosi, a Gavin Newsom, these are the politicians. Yeah. When we have these school board members that have all this control and talk down to parents, progressive elitism, tribalism. Now, anytime I hear that, I think of Hillary. It takes a village, right, to raise a kid, tribalism.
Yeah, well, tribalism is actually a Latin word for three different groups that ran Rome before civilization came, so to speak. But it's the idea that we all associate with, or we hire, or we fire, or we make judgments on people's superficial appearance, i.e. how similar it is to our own. So if we're going to let somebody into college, or we're going to hire somebody as a forklift driver, or we're going to pick somebody for a football player, we look at that person and we think birds of a feather flock together. They're solidarity. They have solidarity with us, whoever the us is. And it's not a multiracial meritocratic system. And it's been the bane of civilization. It's a pre-civilizational idea that predated the Greek city-state or the Roman Republic. You know, we think of tribes, we think of the Huns, the Vandals, the Goths, people who did not advance in the same way that the Romans did because they didn't have a constitutional, tribally blind law. So, you know, when somebody killed somebody, they said that is murder. The Romans did, and the tribal people would say, no, that's one of our people. That's my first cousin. That doesn't apply to him. We need blood feud. We need, you know, so it's a very difficult thing to have a civilization when you're tribal. And we're, unfortunately, as I say in the book, given examples that we're starting to associate by mutually superficial shared appearance.
Tribalism, I guess, in modern day could be a dying citizen is going for a job interview and that boss who interviewed him goes and looks at their social media and doesn't like how they might be politically or something they've said and they're not part of their tribe, so they're not going to hire them. Is that kind of the concept there?
Yeah, I mean, it can transcend ethnic or racial or gender similarities. It can be a political tribe that, say, you're Trevor Carey and somebody wants to be your assistant and learn the technique of how to use a microphone, and you give him a political litmus test. And if he doesn't agree, or you give him an ethnic test or a racial test, but you're not looking for the meritocratic person. So let's say somebody's kind of apolitical, but he doesn't know anything about microphones or technician's job, and then you hire him because he's similar to your appearance or your ideology, and you don't hire the person that would have done a much better job for you.
I guess that boils down, you said that's been around kind of like forever, right?
Yeah, I think it's good to realize that the former Yugoslavia or Rwanda or Iraq, religious tribalism there, it doesn't work. It's never worked in a pluralistic society. It just doesn't work. And we were making great strains after slavery and Jim Crow and the civil rights movement to make superficial appearance, racial identification, incidental to somebody's character, not essential. But now we're re-tribalizing. So we're all going to trill our R's. We're going to put hyphens in our name. Or we're going to suggest that we're going to have this percentage of this particular group or that particular group. And it's not going to end well, believe me, because we're going to promote and hire people on considerations other than merit. And we're a very sophisticated society, and you can see what happens when you start to break down the meritocracy and the respect for the law. You get empty shelves or container ships that are unloaded, or $5 a gallon gas. So these theories have practical ramifications if you're foolish enough to embrace them in the real world. And I think we're starting to see entire systems that we take for granted starting to break down.
I know. I mean, the supply chain, how many times in my life have I thought of the supply chain? Once. That was during the initial lockdown and we had trouble with toilet paper. Outside of that, supply chain as Americans, we look at that like the sun comes up in the morning, right? It's always been there. And part of this now, supply chain, is we're dealing with the globe. And that's a third part of the dying citizen, how progressive elites, tribalism, and globalization are destroying the idea of America. Dr. Hansen, globalization in a simple term.
It just means that when westernization or western modes of capitalism and production start to spread, so the world has, you know, it has a free market capitalist system, or it has t-shirts and flip-flops and jeans, or everybody's listening to DVDs or CDs, that the next level, then people mistakenly say, well, they're all like us, because they have a shared culture under globalization, or we can trade with China now, or we can call Uganda or something in a minute. But therefore, our governments should be all united. We should have global governance so that, you know, that Anthony Blinken can call in the UN to find out whether we're racist or not. Or Klaus Schwab at the Great Reset Project at Davos can tell all the sovereign nations of the world, this is going to be your tax code as far as corporations. And the problem is, of course, of the 190 nations in the world, less than half are democratic. And that's straining the definition of democratic. So why would we surrender our sovereignty to illiberal countries that in part would be made up of nations like Iran or North Korea or China or Russia? Doesn't make any sense. And people have to realize how unique the United States is. If you, Trevor, wanted to become a citizen of Japan or China or Mexico and said, I really like those countries, I'm going to move down there, I'm going to be a full citizen, I'm going to go to university, I'm going to be a politician, you'd never be accepted there because you do not look Mexican or Chinese or Japanese. And I think if somebody was Hispanic or Black and they wanted to go to Germany, it's a great country, but they would never make chancellor there. So people have to step back and look at this country and say, my God, given its historical precedence and the way the world works outside our borders, it's a really rare experiment. It's a very fragile idea.
Experiment is true. And I mean, look at Ilhan Omar. She's a refugee and now she's in Congress. What other nation is that going to happen in? My guest is Dr. Victor Davis Hansen. Dr. Hansen, do you think, I've been saying all this chaos, and you know, we could list five or six big things right now. And I think it's intentional. It has to be. Do you agree it's intentional, or do you think there's some other reasoning? And I'm talking about Afghanistan, the border,
yeah,
all of this.
I think that's what your listeners and everybody can't figure out, Trevor, whether are they so incompetent that they can't get a toy by Christmas on the shelves, or they would cut oil production by 2.5 million barrels over last year, or they would start to suggest that students should be racist to stop racism, or is this chaos pre-designed so that we're just so totally confused and we don't know what's going on that they come in and take control? I mean, when UC Berkeley says now we're going to have flu shots if we're students there, do they really believe that? I mean, that's going to be a mess. Are you going to kick people out of the military that have had COVID and have antibody protection because they don't want to get a vaccination that may not have as good protective ability as a naturally acquired antibody? So we're looking at this, it doesn't make sense. How could Anthony Fauci in his right mind be both the drug and COVID and disease guru and yet apparently have funded gain-of-function research at the Wuhan lab? It doesn't make any sense. So people don't know what's going on. I have my own, as I say in the book, I think it's both. I think that we unleashed a bunch of academics and political activists that never really get close to power. But because of 2020 and the weird election, they did get power and they tried their theories out and it does not work. And they know it doesn't work. And now they're just going to put the metal to the pedal and, you know, pedal to the metal and just you know what, see what you can do is we're going to try to do this until now. It's kind of nihilism. But
it's what kind of ism? What'd you say? What kind of ism?
It's kind of nihilism, you know, nihilist, that they want just to destroy things. So they want to tell you people, you know, you're a racist society. Okay. You're not going to have any Walgreens because people are just going to go in there and loot them. See what you like about that.
Let me ask you about this here. Excuse me for interrupting, but while we're on this path here, I've talked about this a few times, and I don't remember where I came across this. The Cloward-Piven strategy from 1966 for overloading the welfare system to get a replacement of a system. Is this people look that up later on. Cloward, Cloward, Piven, Piven. Dr. Hansen, your thoughts on that from 1966?
Yeah, well, I think people have thought that whether it's the welfare system or the border or critical legal theory, that you wouldn't prosecute crimes, that if you do it in such excess or you print money, that's new monetary theory. You print so much money that the traditional method of economics is destroyed. And then people who have worked and saved and have passbook accounts, it's worth nothing. And that's a good thing, they think, because then the poor person is on equal ground, or the resident is on equal ground with the citizen, or when the welfare state, it's so ubiquitous, then we're all part of it. And so flooding the zone is sort of what we're watching right now. And again, it's a mystery whether they have an agenda that's so hard left, but do they have an agenda? Do they know that if they get their wish, it's going to destroy everything? And then where are they going to be? And you don't know whether they're nihilist or they're anarchist or they're chaotic, but they really are not bothered by 2 million people projected to go across the southern border. They're not bothered by the container ships as far as the eye can see out in the ocean, because Pete Buttigieg, the transportation secretary, has been home for 3 months. He's not bothered. And nobody seems to be bothered by $5 gas. Newsom's not bothered. The state of California is not bothered because they didn't recall him, even though we've had fires and terrible schools and terrible infrastructure and you name it. Everything's been a disaster in California. You can't even go to San Francisco without having your windshield destroyed, or walk on the street without stepping on human excrement. So we're pre-civilizational, and that was one of the themes of the book. It's not just the elites top-down that are creating this huge administrative state or trying to change our customs or making us the citizens of the world. It's we're reverting to a society that's not civilizational. And by that, I mean, they don't have laws. They don't have customs. They don't have traditions. They don't have borders, but they're kind of like tribal people that wander around, migrate in and out. And there's no home. There's no sacred space called the United States. And nobody's committed to it. So, you know, I've taught 36 years in universities, and I can tell you that in my 37th year, if I asked somebody what was the Battle of Gettysburg or the Missouri Compromise or what was Athens or what was Sparta, they don't know. They have no idea whatsoever. But they will be quite willing to tell me what oppression is or what racism is, even though they can't define it. We're creating a whole generation of people who are very arrogant but very ignorant at the same time. And they're in debt. They're not getting married. Trevor, I talk about the destruction of the middle class. They're not getting married till they're in their late 20s or 30s, if at all. They're not having children until their late 30s. They're not buying a home. They're encumbered with $1.7 trillion in university and college debt that really didn't prepare them to be competitive given the quality of the education they borrowed for.
I guess that's good news. They're not reproducing. this mindset. In closing, Dr. Hansen, thank you for your time. What would you say quickly to the parents out there with the Department of Justice, FBI, school boards, all of that? What would you say to parents?
I think they should realize that a lot of people support them, and they may feel they're lonely. But they're on the right side of the issue. They're on the moral side. And they're telling the school boards, you're not going to destroy in the 233rd year of our republic this idea of citizen control of school boards and schools. And we're not going to be racist just so that a few fakers and manipulators can say that we have to be racist to stop racism. And we're not going to unleash people with different sex organs to prey on young girls in bathrooms. We're just not going to do it. call me any name you want. It has no effect on it. And I think that sense of defiance, it can be, it has to be done peacefully, and they are peaceful. And they can say, you know what? I'm not afraid of the FBI. The FBI works for us. And all you FBI people who are being sicked on us, you better ask yourself whether you're breaking the law or not. So I think that as long as they're peaceful and it's done in a legal fashion, everybody is on their side.
All right. Can you be my first call from jail? Can I call you first?
Yeah, absolutely.
I know you say get the book at a local bookstore. You like to support those. It's available, though, everywhere, Amazon, all over the place. The Dying Citizen, Dr. Victor Davis Hanson. And enjoy this good weather weekend. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
There it is. No vaccine, no transplant, you die. What world am I living in? Next.
The Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk. You're listening to The Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk.
Thanks to Dr. Victor Davis Hanson there. Just such a great reminder, man. Government does not grant rights. The government has no right to grant anything. Shake your head, throw some cold water in your face, do whatever it's going to take here to get this through, that the government actually has privileges granted to it by us, we the people. That's why the Constitution is so important. It was written to protect your rights, my rights, actually, from the government. The Constitution is there to tell the government what privileges that we decided that they get. It's that simple. It really is. And it was such a bummer when a few weeks ago when I got to be in D.C., my son wanted me to see if I'd go by and take a picture of the real Constitution. And I went, yeah, that's great. Yeah, I can go do that. And I looked it up, and we're closed because of COVID. I couldn't even go by and get a picture of the Constitution. Well, shocking things. This Colorado-based health system, they were the first one to do it. Another health system kicked in. Cleveland Clinic, well-renowned there, a man waiting for his transplant. I mean, we had someone that used to work here, a friend of mine still here, who had his lung transplant, and he's healthy, doing good today. But got to see that really kind of up close how that happens and the ups and the downs that go on with this. And this man was ready. Everything to get the match is just a victory. Then to see if it takes, you know, if the body takes it. And this man was cut out just 5 days before his surgery. 5 days. And now he'll probably die because he didn't. He actually had the vaccine. The donor didn't have a vaccine. So they said, nuh-uh, not for you. Not going to happen. Isn't that sad? They're saying Monday, parents keeping their kids out of school and don't call in sick. Call in and say my kid's home because of the vaccine. And then, I don't know, maybe take the kids out Christmas shopping or go to the grocery store, right? Is anything on the shelf? I don't know.
Well, here we are in the supermarket. We're standing here with the bare shelves. Look at it. There's absolutely nothing here. The shelves are bare. It's empty. It's empty like Sleepy Joe's brain when you think about it. There's absolutely nothing on the shelf. Look at it. Bare shelves all over the place. They say we're building back better, and yet we have nothing in the supermarkets. We're standing with the bare shelves. Bare shelves, Biden, okay? Empty shelves, Joe. It's a disgrace, believe me.
You can probably still find some beans, some sauce, some hamburger meat, and sausage. Make some chili and turn on the Bulldogs. 11:30 pregame, 12:30 kickoff, AM 1340, 11:30 in the South Valley. Thanks to A's and Squires this week. God willing, we'll be back Monday. John Girardi's coming up next. Really, truly enjoy your weekend.